Hour number three, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Wednesday. We're at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane back at the studios. And we say hello now to John McClain, who usually joins us on Monday, but moving things around this week. John, what's up? How you doing?
Well, I'm getting ready for a big week for Houston tomorrow, the start of the Houston Open Golf Tournament. The Houston Cougars play Illinois in what should be one of the best games in March Madness. And then the Astros play in the afternoon. They play their first game against division rival Angels. So you could go to the golf tournament in the morning, go to the baseball at 3:10, and you can make the Cougars at 9:05. And there's a lot of people trying to do just that.
Wow, that's going to be a packed day for sure when it comes to Houston sports. I saw that Adam Schefter tweeted a few moments ago that next week at the NFL owners' meetings, the owners are likely to approve the Super Bowl going back to Las Vegas in, I guess, 2029 would be Super Bowl 63. So L.A., Atlanta, Las Vegas would be the next three. How does that process work, and when do you think Nashville falls into the rotation with the new stadium?
Usually, when does the stadium open, 27?
Yeah, this will be the final season at the old one, so yeah.
Usually they want you to have a season or two that you play in your stadium, and so you can make sure everything is working perfectly. Then they give you one. I can't imagine that Buffalo's going to get one. Buffalo is just too small. Buffalo's not a destination city like Nashville, which has so many hotel rooms. But usually if you build a new stadium, that's one of the selling points. I'll guarantee you Nashville's definitely going to get one. Could be in 30 or 31. And Buffalo, I'll be interested to see. You know, used to, if you ask, And I don't care about the fans. I only cared about the media when I went to more than 40. What was convenient for the media and what I wanted was the NFL headquarters where you worked and where you had the radio row and then your hotel, everything within walking distance. The best for that is New Orleans. Now, people had a blast in Vegas. Because who doesn't have a blast in Vegas? I was just there for 5 days, unless you bet stupidly and lose a lot of money. So everybody loves Vegas. They're always going to go to L.A. because of the stadium. And they'll go to South Florida, and like Houston won't get any more. Tampa probably won't. They got another one coming for Atlanta. I am amazed that Jerry Jones, if not the most influential owner who has the most seats, has not been able to get another one since the last one, in which the weather was terrible, not their fault, of course. Atlanta had two in which the weather was shut down everything during the week, but got a third one. And they had a ticket scandal, and I don't know why they haven't gone back to the Metroplex. The hotel situation was terrible. One team's in Dallas, one's in Fort Worth. They tried to please everybody and ended up with hotels, fire alarms going off in the middle of the night. I thought it was a disaster for a guy that prides himself on doing things, not the team, but doing things in a first-class manner.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. John McClain is with us, so we will we'll see what happens here in the next few years if they come here for the Super Bowl.
John, why is it the NFL can't get this referee thing done? I mean, the high replacement refs, it was a disaster, 2012 or 13, and now it looks like it might happen again. This has got to get resolved, right? Because this doesn't make the game fun when you have to do this.
Anytime you have unions negotiating, they're not smooth. And the referees won't be, but then the NFL, which has more money than God, will give them what there'll be some kind of compromise, and they'll get it done. They should have learned their lesson the last time they did that, because it was disaster, that failed Mary play that that I think Aaron Rodgers was involved in, and it was a joke. And with so much at stake now, with so much money involved, the last thing you want to do is put, now I know people may laugh, people out there who are incompetent. And because a lot of people think the current officials, too many of them are incompetent. But the fact is, when you see the replacements and then the real guys come back, that's when they're most popular.
Oh, absolutely. Have we done, and John, we value your opinion so much. Have we done so much to take it out of the hands of the referees that they're almost not a part of what goes on anymore?
No, I think if you have a way to fix mistakes, you should do it if you can do it in a timely manner. That's why I've always agreed with Bill Belichick, make every play reviewable. Problem is, you don't increase the challenges, therefore the games are not any longer. So there would not be one play that you didn't have a chance to challenge if you hung on to your final challenge. But for whatever reason, the NFL won't do it. And but I think they're human. The players are bigger, faster. They get in the way. And I think if you have any way to help them, you should. I've always liked a sky judge, and he sees things, and immediately he'll say pass interference on number 26, McCabe, and they'll call it immediately. Or pick up that flag, and it's picked up immediately. They don't have to announce that it's done up there. Doesn't matter who tells them. They pick up flags all the time after group meetings. And there's just so much at stake financially, gambling, with advertisers. You don't want mistakes. Think about some of the most egregious mistakes we've ever seen, like the Saints getting screwed in a championship game. You don't want those anymore.
By the way, that McCabe, I told him to play the ball, not the player. So you're right.
John, I don't like him.
He's not coachable.
I don't like this. It's according to verbiage, NFL released Tuesday, league staff members can alert a replacement referee if they see clear and obvious evidence of an uncalled foul for roughing the passer, intentional grounding, or an act that would normally lead to disqualification. I don't want to do a job, John, where the slightest bit, if I'm off, they're yanking me out of here. The refs already have enough pressure as it is. The fact that if they get a small call wrong in the eyes of one person, that they're out of here, this is not good for the game.
No, it's not good for the game, and I'm surprised they came up with that.
John McClain is with us here on the program. So, John, we're knee-deep in mock drafts right now, and Jim Wyatt does a great job at TennesseeTitans.com of kind of compiling what everybody thinks about the Titans, but I'm still seeing a lot of pass rushers going at 4 to the Titans, edge rushers. What do you think about that, and why have there been so many?
I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Great pass rushers. Is Myles Garrett a great pass rusher? Yes.
Yes.
What's he done for the Browns? Is Max Crosby a great pass rusher? Yes. What's he done for the Raiders? You have a young quarterback, and a great pass rusher like David Bailey is not going to help the young quarterback. How many plays does a great pass rusher affect the game? 3 or 4 when he gets the quarterback? He's going to get doubled. Maybe he frees up somebody else. If you get a guy like Jeremiah Love, who some people have as the top player in the draft, others say second to Mendoza, and you have a chance to take him as a great runner and receiver who would take so much pressure off of Cam Ward, you're going to do it. I cannot believe that Mike Bagonzi and Robert Saleh would pass him up. People picking edge rushers are doing it just because Saleh is a defensive coach, which is stupidity. How many defensive linemen have they signed already? Reese Myers, what's the guy? Him, they got Johnson, they traded Jermaine Johnson. They've got the best defensive tackle in the game. That's enough. If you put David Bailey, who I think is the best pure pass rusher, you put him at the other end, you already got two guys in there to start right now. That's why I saw a mock draft a while ago on The Athletic, that had the Cowboys trading up to 3 with Arizona to take Jeremiah Love. That's not going to happen. They just signed Javonte Williams to a new contract. You know, I like the fact that a lot of people in the media, and I respect a lot of them, had Love going to Kansas City, New Orleans, yeah, Washington, and Kansas City knows he's not coming that far down. And so they're signing guys. Arizona signed guys because running backs, because they want somebody else. And I look at all the great running backs in this franchise's history, like Earl Campbell, the way he transformed the Oilers into a perennial Super Bowl contender. And then what Eddie George did with Steve McNair. Chris Johnson is another one. Derrick Henry is another one. And that's why Jeremiah Love has got to be their pick. I think he will be their pick, and I'll be shocked if he's not.
John, in 87, the Oilers had the number 3 pick in the first round. They took a running back out of Miami, Alonzo Highsmith. Was he needed there? Was he the best player at that moment at number 3 in the 87 draft?
It's interesting because Alonzo, who I am good friends with, is a top, a really good personnel guy. He's with the Patriots right now, helped him go to the Super Bowl. Alonzo held out. His agent, the late Robert Fraley, who was killed in a plane crash because Payne Stewart, the great golfer, was his client. They held out till the trade deadline. And it was ugly and nasty because back then you could do it. And the Oilers had holdouts every year.
Right.
And we were chasing them at both of our airports here, trying to find them when we knew Fraley and Highsmith were coming in. And then when he finally signed, it was almost too late. Then he got hurt. His career never panned out as a player for being the 3rd overall pick. But boy, as a personnel man, he might have been worth the 1st overall pick.
We'll have more with John McClain coming up next, live from the Omni here on 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Wednesday at the Omni Nashville Hotel, continuing our conversation with John McClain down in Houston, who I believe we need to reconnect with. We'll do that in just a second. By the way, we've gotten a few texts from people about us if we went to Turkey and got our hair done, and some of the ChatGPT concepts are hilarious. Our friend Ricky said we looked like an 80s wrestling tag team, in which I said the Midday Express instead
we'll
of the Midnight
Express.
We'll
tweet those out, but we've got 4 or 5 different people have texted in with all of us with the different hair.
So good.
Thank you.
John McClain rejoins us now. John, I thought this was funny. I saw that Joe Flacco, who's re-signed with the Bengals, he blasted dumb teams who didn't offer him a chance to start at 41 years of age. I mean, Flacco still going at it and going, coming back for his 19th season.
Good for him, but I don't think any team in the right mind is going to offer him a chance to be a starter. He's not Tom Brady, but he's making a lot of money, and he loves Cincinnati. Remember those stories last year? He lived by himself. His family, I guess, was back in Delaware, and he would walk around downtown to different cafes and restaurants that people told him to try, and he was treated like royalty, so I could see him going back there and being a backup. And hopefully, if you're a Bengals fan, he will never set foot on a field.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I don't know how you feel about this. It's time for Joe Burrow to, I think, get that team somewhere. And he's got some pieces around him. Now, defense has always kind of been the question there, but – I mean, it's time for him to be in the MVP contention. It's time for them to make the playoffs and all of that. So I agree with you. Joe Flacco should ride the bench the whole time.
And I think he will, and I think he understands that. But on the other hand, think about it. Joe Burrow gets hurt every year. Yeah. Last time I think he was healthy, they went to the Super Bowl and lost. And notoriously, they were getting off to slow starts as well. By the way, I went back and looked at all the running backs the Oilers used before they got Eddie George in 1996, and he had almost 1,400 yards rushing as a rookie. And Alonzo Highsmith, when he was there with Alan Pinkett, those two had like 500 and 400 yards. Lorenzo White came along, had one 1,000-yard season. Another guy, Gary Doodoo Brown, he had 1,000 one year. And they really – and they were okay, but, boy, when Eddie George got there, he transformed that offense along with Steve McNair, of course. And that's why I just don't understand why the Titans might pass up possibly the best prospect in the draft who could help the team for, you know, if you say he has a short career, what's that, 6, 7, 8 years? I think they'd settle that. By 6, 7, or 8 years, everybody there is going to be fired anyway.
You're right on that. John, what about the late, great Rodney Thomas? Did he get 1,000 yards in 95?
No, Rodney had 900, I think, close to 950. Never quite hit 1,000.
Yeah, wow, he was a good little plug-in there for all that was going on. John, the owners' meetings are next week. You've covered these for many years. How has the owners' meeting evolved? Because it seems like now there's a lot of access for reporters there. Was that always, or has that always been the case?
No, there's nowhere near the access that we used to have. Used to, like, you could, like, the Biltmore in Baltimore, in Scottsdale was the best place. And the owners would be having meetings in ballrooms. And the media, we could stand outside the ballrooms. If any of them came out for lunch and they wanted to talk to us, they'd talk to us. If they didn't, they wouldn't. And that's where I think I've told you this story, but let me tell it again. There was talk that Bud Adams was going to try to get the Oilers moved from the AFC Central to the West because the Central stadiums were all baseball stadiums with small capacity except for Cleveland, and that stadium was awful for baseball and football. And he was going to lobby to get in the West. I don't know who he was going to try to replace. So I hadn't been able to talk to him, and he came out, and he walked through the media, and he went to the restroom. Well, kind of an unwritten rule is the media didn't follow owners in to the restroom. But I decided, you know what? I'm going to go in there because I got to go too. I got just as much right to go as Bud does.
Right.
So I went in there. I'm standing at the urinal next to Bud, and I'm looking at the wall, and he's looking at the wall, and I'm like, "How you doing, Bud?" He said, "Fine. How are you?" I said, "Before you're through, and I meant today, I'd like to talk to you about these rumors that you might be interested in going to AFC West." And I saw him kind of turn toward me as he was finished up. And all of a sudden, that's why I should have worn boots, I felt on my tennis shoe this wetness.
And oh, no.
So Bud was shaking while he was facing me. And so I looked down as he was leaving, and I said, "So we have time later?" He said, "Sure." And he talked to me about it. And he swore it was an act. He said, "Sorry." And I'm like, "No problem." And so I'm sure it was an accident. But he didn't have to turn toward me. So back then, well, you could go to the pool. If owners by the pool, their wives, you could go up and talk to them anytime. Now they have strict restrictions. The best thing about it is you have coaches' breakfasts, which they always had separate days, AFC, NFC, and they had to sit still for an hour while waves and waves of media would come there. And I think that's changed through the years. But if you're walking through the halls, you can stop and talk to anybody. And now the media is restricted about where they can stand. But I still think it's the best, it's the most relaxed thing you can do in the NFL in the off season because there's no pressure on anybody at that point. And I started to go this year, and but I didn't. I also started to go to the combine, but I didn't. But at some point, I'm going to go back to those. To me, those were the two things I enjoyed the most about the off season.
Well, John, I'm sure there's a lot of coaches that would like to pee on Kuharski's tennis shoes if they had the chance.
You mean they haven't?
I don't know. John, I got a problem with this. It says that the there will be no discussion about the tush push at next week NFL owners draft or owners meeting. Sorry. The play will be back in 2026. John, I don't like owners voting on things like that. Am I wrong in this?
Well, I think the owners, they have to vote because there's owners. They are the owners. The recommendations come from the competition committee. They meet there for a couple of weeks earlier and decide what they, of all the proposals that they're going to present to the owners, and some of those owners are clueless when it comes to football and things that go on in football, and the smart ones will do what their coach and general manager recommends. And but most of them want you to think they're a football genius, and they don't. But there's a, I don't understand why it would not be discussed, since it's such a bone of contention, and it should be voted on again. I think Roger Goodell doesn't like it, and he came close to getting it banned last year, so I don't understand it at all.
Going to be interesting to see, John, how it all shakes out. Appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, shakes out. Thanks, guys, very much.
I was just making sure you were paying attention. John McClain joining us from Houston. What a story.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
What a story. We'll have more coming from the Omni Nashville Hotel here on 102.5 The Game.